Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guesthouse overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission.
Hillary Kaiser. Here we are.
Here we are.
Fresh from Paris.
Well, almost. Via San Francisco. But yeah.
So your roots are San Francisco.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I grew up in the city. And was born in New York City, but when I was three, my family came west, and I grew up in San Francisco.
But then at some point, you moved to France.
I did, yeah.
And that was quite a long time ago, wasn't it?
Very. If you calculate, the whole thing was 1962.
Wow.
My father got a job in Paris when I was 15, and we moved to Paris, but I was in an American bubble, so I vowed I would return, which I did, and I met a Frenchman, and I was married to a French husband for 25 years, but I still live in Paris.
Mm-hmm. So living in Paris, there are a lot of different neighborhoods.
Yeah.
It's a real diverse city.
It is.
So you lived in the city most of your time?
Well, when we were married, we lived out in the suburbs in a small village called Verrières-le-Buisson, and I was pretty active there. The village where we lived wanted to have a twin city in England, and so I joined the Twinning Association, it was called, and I found them a twin city in Kent, and we lived there as I was raising my family. But since I've been divorced, I've moved back into the city.
Interesting. You're in the city, you're in the heart of this urban, metropolitan, multicultural environment, and there have been some uncomfortable explosions in the civility in Paris recently. Talk to us about that.
Yes, it's rather complicated because we've had a series of movements, demonstrations. The first one was what was called the Yellow Vests movement, which was about 2 years ago. And that was, I would say, mostly people in the rural part of France. And it began over the increase in the price of gas for cars. And a lot of the people in the rural environment depend on their cars to get to work.
Interject for a moment, because in France and England, people pay probably, what, four times what you would in California for gas.
Yeah, very expensive.
Yeah.
Although prices, I've just been noticing prices here have gone up quite a bit, but they have in France as well. Yeah, they pay a lot.
And so you pay per liter what somebody pays per gallon.
That's right. I think there's something like 4 liters in a gallon or something like that. Yes, and it's expensive. I don't have a car anymore. I gave up having a car. You don't need a car in Paris. Mm-hmm. You can take buses and metros and everything. So, well, getting back to the Yellow Vest movement, it started like that, and then it spread. Unfortunately, our president, Emmanuel Macron, is not very popular, especially among young people. He's seen as being quite arrogant. He's very intelligent. He's young. I personally voted for him because I thought it would, you know, change the scene, but he's just not been successful reaching the common people and young people. So we had the Yellow Vest movement, then we had a transportation strike, then we had over the retirement age, which for Americans is very difficult to understand because they want to make the official retirement age 64 instead of 62. They passed the bill. And what really irked the population was that it was passed even though there were many amendments, there were many demonstrations, there were 11 days of strikes. I mean, it still passed, and it went through. He forced it through. There was something in the Constitution where the president can force through a bill, and that's what he did. And then more recently, there was a young teenager of 17 who was of Arab descent who was shot down by the police for going through a traffic light or something. And so now it's all against police brutality and profiling, et cetera. And so,
and again, once again, the blowback has everything to do with what you just alluded to, racial profiling.
Yes,
and
exactly.
The fact that minorities in France feel second, third class and kind of cut out of opportunities.
Now, I have three sons, and when my sons were younger, if they were with, say, a black friend or with a friend of Arab descent, in France, you have to always carry your identity card with you. So sometimes if they were walking with their friends, the police would come up and ask for their IDs. And they always would go after the... I agree. It was mostly after the minority groups that they would go. No, there's a lot to be done, that's for sure.
Really multidimensional, even time contextually, going back to the colonial era. And most of these people come from former French colonial holdings.
Yeah.
So there is this weird kind of karmic blowback from that colonial past haunting the European French people today.
You're absolutely right, yeah. And yet, there's been on the media, for example, if you watch French TV, there are people of color who are now broadcasters, etc. Mm-hmm. There's been, just as in Britain, when I go to Britain, there are lots of people who are of color who are talking. But it is true. I think it's more complicated than just race. Mm-hmm. I think it's also class. And a lot of immigrants came over. They were asked to come back in the 60s and 70s. And they ended up in high-rise buildings that are on the outskirts of Paris that are really not livable. I mean, they have large families. They're in small quarters. It's been very hot in Paris recently. These working-class people do not go on holiday the way, you know, a bourgeois or, middle-class family would go on holiday.
Right.
They're stuck in these big towers. And I think that often happens is when there are these demonstrations, they go. And, must say, they can begin quietly, but then they're infiltrated by delinquents. And, that's the bad problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and taking that a step further, a friend of mine was a Rand scholar and spent, he's from Bulgaria originally, but spent a lot of time in France.
Mm-hmm.
And he said one of the problems is first generation immigrants is highly motivated to acculturate and make it.
Mm-hmm.
But in many cases, he said the second generation and third doesn't make it, gets bitter and feels disenfranchised, and therefore does not learn the proper language skills to be a viable employee and whatnot, and in many respects is unemployable.
Yeah.
And so, but then they feel double victimized. And he said that's the catch-22.
And there are, in these high-rise buildings I was telling you about, sometimes families are afraid because there's drug dealing going down in the basement, and, it really is. And bus drivers don't even like to drive through some of these neighborhoods because it can be very dangerous.
Yeah, literally they call them no-go neighborhoods.
Right, it's right. And I know on American media you see cars burning all the time. It's usually very localized. It's not usually in the center of Paris.
Right.
It's not in my neighborhood. You know, people have written me and said, well, how are you? I live in the 15th arrondissement. Nothing's going on. The only thing that I was terribly affected by was the garbage collection strike. That went on for about 2 or 3 weeks, and there were huge plastic garbage bags
piles
all over.
Piles in the street.
Piles. It was bad.
Yeah.
It was really bad. Yeah. But,
when there isn't a strike going on and things are kind of normal, you feel comfortable walking around your neighborhood, going to the park, going to the river.
Yeah, no, it's a very safe city on the whole. Oh, yeah. And I take the metro and I go down the Seine River. There might be some areas in the north or east of Paris, some of the arrondissements like the 18th or the 19th or the 20th, where there's some issues. But on the whole, you go there during the day, that's perfectly fine. You have open markets, you have all sorts of things. Yeah. And my neighborhood is very family-ish. It's quiet. It's really, it's diverse, but it's quiet.
Mm-hmm. So since you kind of straddle two cultures, you come back to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So you keep your finger on the pulse beat here as well as there.
I try to.
Looking in from the outside at us here on the West Coast, how do things compare? Do you feel more comfortable in Paris than you would if you moved back to San Francisco?
I haven't been into the city of San Francisco since I've only been in the States, back in the States for about 10 days.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I haven't been into the city yet. And I'm going next week. I'm going to take BART over because I've been staying in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take BART over and I really want to see the city. I've heard about the homelessness. Yeah. I haven't seen it myself. Mm-hmm. And
well, it's, that being said, talk to us about homelessness in Paris.
Oh, there's lots of it. There's lots
meaning.
Of it. Yeah. It's mostly immigrants. Mm-hmm. It's people from Africa, from North Africa, from Eastern Europe. A lot of homelessness on the streets as well. Right. And a lot of panhandling in the subway, asking for money, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm used to it because there is some in Paris, right. Yeah. But I've heard that San Francisco, it's the downtown is empty because since COVID, some of these apartment buildings.
Yeah, the office. It's like 38% vacancy.
That's what I'd heard, yeah. Whereas in Paris, you don't feel that. Mm-hmm. Paris, it's come back. I don't know if this is run reason, but there were subsidies that were given, you know, to keep on employees, to stimulate, and mm-hmm. they've come back to work. There are some industries like restaurants, et cetera, that are having a hard time finding, waiters,
workers. Yeah.
And Paris, I mean, there are so many tourists at the moment. Mm-hmm. I left just 10 days ago, and, I mean, it's incredible. And there, what we used to have is a lot of Asian tourists. I haven't seen many Asian tourists this mm-hmm. time around. It's mostly Americans and Europeans and South Americans. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, again, you've lived in both cultures, and mm-hmm. from a socioeconomic perspective,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people you hear in America going, oh my God, the socialist countries in Northern Europe, mm-hmm. Sweden or whatever, they have such punitive high tax rates.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you talk to anybody from these punitive tax rate states and they're happy.
Yeah.
They're content.
Yeah. Well, I am very pleased with the French health system. I was a teacher. I don't have a great retirement, but I can live on it.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I own my apartment, so I don't have to pay high rents. The medical system is wonderful. We have wonderful doctors. It's not like in Britain where you have to wait and wait and wait. I can go see a specialist. I've had cataract surgery. I didn't have to pay anything.
So there are pretty much no out-of-pocket for you.
Well, not for me, because I'm very careful.
Mm-hmm.
We have a system where you have sector one, sector two, and sector one is it's completely covered. Sector two is specialists that you pay extra for. And from time to time, I'll go to one of those, but most of the time, I try to keep in my budget.
Right. Yeah. But it's not a huge surcharge.
It's not like in America, no. Mm-hmm. No, and I mean, I'll give you another example. I have a daughter-in-law who has breast cancer, and she's 40 years old. She has gone through it was discovered when she was 35. She's had a mastectomy, she's had chemo, she's had radiotherapy, she's had hormone therapy, she's had her ovaries removed. She was a teacher, professor, teacher. For the last 2 years, she's been on full salary. Next year, she's going to go on half salary. We don't know when she can go back because she's having side effects with the chemo that she's doing. But I mean, had she lived in the States, I don't know what would... I mean, apparently the pills that she takes cost something like, 2,000 euros a month or something. And my son and daughter-in-law couldn't afford that, but it's covered.
Yeah.
And I mean, if that's socialized medicine, I'm for it, yes.
Any other pluses to cultural life in France and Paris versus your time here?
My time here. I love the cultural life in Paris. I speak French. I love the theater. I go to the theater. You can get seats that aren't too expensive. You can go to concerts. You can go to exhibits. I love art exhibits.
And again, the economic entrance to the Louvre or whatever is not a deal breaker.
No, it's not. Oh, I mean, it's, there's some cities in the world where you have free museums, but Paris isn't one of them, unfortunately, except on the first of the month.
Yep.
The Louvre is open free of charge to anybody. You have to stand in line a bit, but mm-hmm. you can get special rates if you're a senior or you're unemployed or that type of mm-hmm. thing. Yeah, you do. No, I love the cultural life in Paris. I love the food, of course, the restaurants, the cafes. I love the cafes.
How about the cost of food and dining out?
It's gotten more expensive. Mm-hmm. It has gotten. It's. I mean, you used to be able to, for 15 euros, which is what, like $18, mm-hmm. have a full meal and everything. It's gone up to, say, 25 now, okay. you know, something like that. But everything is included when you go to a French restaurant. What shocks me here is that you've got not only the sales tax, but you've got the tips. So the tips are, you know, people are asking 20% or more now. Yep. I'll tell you what the custom is in France. Tipping is included. The service is included. Mm-hmm. But most people leave maybe 1 or 2 euros, which is maybe like 30 cents or something, mm-hmm. or maybe up to five euros mm-hmm. extra just for the person who's serving you.
Right.
But normally, and I've seen this, they do share all the tips at the end of the day, you know.
So
it's they pool them. What I do like in California particularly is the open spaces, and I love the water. I miss the sea, you mm-hmm. know, that type of thing.
But you go to the sea in France.
Oh, I do. Yeah. Yes, I do. I go to the Mediterranean, of course, but also to the Atlantic. I like the Atlantic, and I go
to. Do you have a favorite?
Yes, I do. There's a favorite place. It's the Bay of Arcachon, and the Bay of Arcachon is 20 minutes by train from Bordeaux. So it's on the the English Channel side, the Atlantic mm-hmm. side, and the bay is a beautiful, beautiful bay, very green, with a sand dune. It's the largest sand dune in Europe. I love it down there. It's really beautiful. I like warm water though, so when I want warm water, I go to the Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm. But when you go to the Atlantic side in France, how do you get there?
How do I get there?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have a car,
right.
I take a train. Mm-hmm. I take the TGV train from Paris to Bordeaux, 2.5 hours direct,
and high speed.
Right, and then a local train from Bordeaux to Arcachon. So it's very easy. That is one thing I love about Europe is the public transportation, especially France.
Yeah.
It has a wonderful train system. In Paris, we have the metro, we have buses. I take a lot of buses. Because I don't like going down underground anymore, but I live near 5 bus stops of different buses, so I go all over town in the bus. Yeah.
And you don't have to wait long.
No. And they have something which I haven't seen here, is they have a digital clock that tells you how long when the bus is coming.
Oh, yeah,
it's wonderful. So you know you've got a 5-minute wait, and you can also connect with the app as well to see when the bus is coming.
I stayed north of Zurich one time.
All right.
About 20 kilometers north.
Yeah.
And I go to the train station, and they had the little counter for the next train into like microseconds.
And
you never had to wait more than 15 minutes for a train.
Right. Wow. Yeah, it's cool.
That it makes really you wonder why we cannot do that here.
You know, and I've heard people who have maybe 2 cars or something say, oh, we should, you know, do something about the transportation system, but mm-hmm. they still take their cars.
Yep.
Or they live in places where there's no transportation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very lucky in France. We have a wonderful train system, you know, wonderful, wonderful.
And they're smooth.
And they're smooth.
They're clean.
Yeah. There are advantages. I mean, we do have strikes. And there are social problems.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not getting around it. And the cost of living is going up. Our poor French health system, which is so wonderful, which everybody envies, is in, you know, it's always been in the hole. It's always
mm-hmm.
been. I have 2 of my sons are teachers, and they say that the government is not giving enough money to teachers. Teachers in France, I was a teacher as well, are very poorly paid compared to the States. They really are. I mean, our retirement is very low. But on the other hand, we have health care, we have job security, you know, you take these competitive exams to be a teacher and you have tenure for life practically, so, mm-hmm. you know, you have job security, which is good.
That's really cool.
Right.
Parting thoughts, anything you're holding back that
Parting
you want to share?
Parting thoughts, no. No, I mean, I've lived more than half my life abroad in France, and I'm very attached to France. I have dual citizenship. I vote in both countries. But I love America, and I love coming back here, especially California, which is where I grew up, and it hasn't changed that much. I mean, the Bay is still there. San Francisco Bay is still there. I feel very lucky to have both cultures. I really do.
That's really cool. To learn more about your world, Hillary, do you have like a website? How would somebody find out more about you?
Well, I'm in the process of redoing my website, but you can still check it. It's www.hillarykaiser.com.
That's easy.
It is easy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Hillary, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for interviewing me.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's been fascinating. I love learning more about different cities and cultures.
Wow, yeah. Bravo, Tom. Bravo.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. We've been visiting with author, playwright, and international traveler, Hillary Kaiser.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students, preserving the past and inspiring future generations of dreamers. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, STEAM, along with studying the legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture. The Foundation at Hearst Castle not only changes the lives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors and members. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundationathearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.